Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Tal Paul with the Permaculture Central Blog Talk Radio Show, and we've had some technical issues tonight, which we do practically every week. But we have Joey here with us, Joey D'Elia. How are you, Joey?
I'm doing well now that we've got it all figured out.
All right, so hopefully this is recording. We have no idea if it is or not, but it sounds like we are. So let me go back to my studio here just to make sure. Yes, it looks like we're connected. Tonight's topic is composting, mulch, and worms.
Sounds good to eat.
Well, actually, when I was in high school.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this is true. In high school, our biology teacher had worms that he cooked up. He had, you know, first purged them and made worms for us to eat. And also we did the snails. So I guess they're a very good source of protein, although this is not what the topic of the show is.
Oh, well, I'm getting hungry already, though.
Well, Joey, tell us. I mean, in your wilderness survival experience, have you ever... Tell us about worms. What do you know?
Oh, well, you know...
I mean, would you eat them as a source of protein?
Sure. Them, worms, grubs, snails, grasshoppers, all sorts of insects. Are tasty treats, especially when you're hungry. Oh boy, it's nothing like when you're in the forest and you're trying to, you know, see what you can find to eat, and it makes a difference when you're really hungry.
All right, now, so for all of you that are listening, that really wasn't what our intent was to talk about tonight, but we were going to talk about composting, once again, composting, mulch, and worms. And so when I think of composting, you know, it's something that people have heard of, and actually a lot of people are doing, but not for themselves. So like where I have a home in my neighborhood, you cut your grass and you gather your leaves and you put them in a bin and then you send them off to a city dump, and the city does the composting for you. But Joey, tell us why that's not a good idea.
Okay, so it's not a good idea if you're deciding to have, in the sense, well, because you're removing stuff off-site. You're taking nutrients and organic matter, and you're sending it away from your property, when ideally it should be returned to your property. The big concern, if let's say you were said, well, I'm going to send it away, and then I'll go get it back from the composting facility that's processing all the municipal green waste. You go and you get that. Well, now, if you wanted to grow organically or have an organic garden, these types of things, you're going to go pick up composted materials that are, let's say, especially they're laden with a lot of chemicals. Typically, if everybody was to put their grass clippings in, and here in Southern California, there's a bunch of lawns and they're sprayed and fertilized with chemical fertilizers. They're sprayed with a lot of fungicides, herbicides like broadleaf herbicides, so they kill weeds. And you definitely don't want an accumulation of broadleaf herbicides like weed killers in compost in your vegetable garden, because your vegetables are all broadleaf plants. And putting compost like that over a long period of time can, you know, even if you have a lot of carbon in the soil, you can really build up, because those herbicides, those are, you know, made with petroleum molecules and stuff. So they last a long time. And that can be a problem. And you're getting, you're combining, at the compost facility, they're combining green waste from everybody's house, all sorts of situations. And they may do a real good job composting and make quality, like, looking compost, and it may work good, but you just don't know what you're getting. And, I mean, you could say it wouldn't be too bad if you put it, like, if you had specific uses for it and you're going to put it in certain areas, maybe if you're going to compost your grass again. But,
well, like an example, so like in our municipality, you could go because we're citizens, we've contributed to this green waste and, you know, they compost it for us. We could go and get all this free. And literally on the website it says certified organic mulch or compost. And for years it said that. Well, they've removed it since because technically I think the only requirement of it being organic is that it reached a certain amount of temperature for a certain amount of time. But they realized that the output of what they were actually sending back to the community had toxic chemicals and things in it. So they're no longer calling it organic compost, which is smart. And basically, you know what you put on your lawn. You know what you put in your garden. And once you send it away and bring something back, even if you're buying it at the Home Depot or some other store, you really don't know where the history of that compost is. So there are techniques that you can do, even within city limits, which make it easier for you to compost and to actually process that waste and keep those nutrients that came from your soil on site. Now, one thing when I would read all these books, you know, about gardening is they talk about mulch and, you know, get all the leaves from your place. We don't really have leaves here. I mean, when you live in the city, you're lucky to have one tree, and usually they are not deciduous, which means they don't lose their leaves. And so when you look in these photos and even on YouTube of the kids playing in all the leaves, it's neat to see, but I couldn't really relate to it. It's like, well, where do I get the brown material, you know, for my compost and stuff like that? But definitely, so like for me, what I found that I was interested in is what's called vermicomposting, which is using worms that can, you know, eat the waste as well. But let's start with composting. Joey, there's a ratio. They talk about brown material to green material. What's this recipe?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't... The recipe stuff is more... has to do with the method. Is it... If you were to do... Because they have a... You know, people. Most people, a lot of people have heard about hot compost, where you have... You have this what they call thermophilic bacteria that heat up the compost. The bacteria is dying and living at these high temperatures and creating this heat. But there's also other methods that are cold composting, and then there's some where you just leave these piles for like a year, and then there's ones that are kind of warm. They're not super hot. And you turn them one time, and then there's like a Berkeley method that's turned, you know, every 2 days, and that's that ratio, if I remember correctly, is a third
green.
I think it's a third green and a third carbon dry material and a carbaceous material, and then a third of greens, manures, vegetables, some type of something to heat it up and provide nitrogen to the mix. But
well, the truth is in nature, so like if we were to look at the forest, which is what we do in permaculture, is you'd say, well, how does the nature do it? So in nature, there's no one planting seeds, there's no one, you know, tilling the soil, and there's no one making compost. It does it on its own. So
yeah, nature has that, you know, kind of that cold compost method, unless you get like a something rotting or dying, something big carcasses. Sometimes that can heat up an area, get some thermophilic bacteria. But generally, there's that the mulching kind of cold compost method where...
With the worms.
Yeah, and then you got the worms in the soil, so you got the vermicomposting, so you got that layer of organic material, like all the leaves falling off the trees, landing on the soil, and you have it being moist underneath between the soil and the organic matter, the leaves, and you have the worms under there eating and pooping. And then you have bacteria. In some places, there's not a lot of worms, or there's no worms in some areas, and you have bacteria doing the job, and little tiny insects doing the job. So if we're talking about that kind of composting, then it's just the life in the soil that's doing that composting, of breaking down that organic matter and to feed the soil and feed other organisms, and eventually the roots get what they need from all their little associations in the soil. But for us at home...
So that's kind of the ultimate goal, is like be as close to nature as possible, but that's not really realistic in, you know, a city and other places. And we can speed up time by using these different processes, right?
Well, yeah, and what you're doing too is in the city, if you're thinking about growing a lot of your own food, well, that food takes a lot of nutrients to grow. It's the same. Sometimes we think of, it's nice to think about to really understand what's going on is you're eating all this food that you buy from the grocery store for some, you know, or even directly from a farmer, let's say a farmer's market or something. They're using a lot of inputs into the soil to grow all that produce for us to eat. So at your home, if you want to grow and have large yields, you've got to think about the fertility of the soil if you want to have a very, you know, highly productive, strong garden. One of the greatest ways to provide that fertility is through composting. Now, in the beginning, let's say you didn't have any compost, but you wanted to start making it. To get compost fast, you would use a fast method, which would one that deals with heat and allows you to make compost quickly. Now, you won't get as much carbon in that compost, the carbon's really an asset when you're building humus. And humus is what we want in our gardens. Well, we want it everywhere, really, for growing. But you want it in your gardens to really provide nutrients to the plants and to everything else that's living in the soil. The thing with growing your own food is, and starting from the beginning, is you need to buy stuff to amend your soil, to get your things going, fertilizers. If you want to get going quickly, and you want things to move at more quicker pace, I mean, it's the same thing's happening out in the organic fields you're buying all this food from, but now you're actually starting to produce it locally at your house. You know, it's going to take some time and effort, but you have to understand that's going on at the farm. It might as well go on at your house where you're putting these inputs in, and eventually you can take the food that you grow and the kitchen waste that's left over and these types of things like that, you can put back into your compost and you can start that cyclic cycle. And of course, I'll say it right now, if you want this dream or this idea of this system where you produce a lot of your own food and your own fertilizer, you can grow a lot of compost material. You can grow all your nitrogen compost stuff for the compost, your carbon stuff, that means like your dry stuff, maybe corn stalks, wheat stalks, these different stuff like that for your carbon. You can grow like fava beans and different greeny material, alfalfa, to make compost with, to eventually make a fertilizer. But your limiting factor is always going to be that you poop in a toilet and to flush it. The minute you take your nutrients and you flush them down the toilet, they don't cycle within the property, so you'll always be deficient because of that factor. Now, it's not a horrible thing. It's something to understand, though, to make a proper assessment of how much compost you're going to need to make, what things you're going to add into it, because typically most agricultures, China, for instance, was heavy on compost, taking all of their feces, all their manures, even their human manures, and using them in all the agricultural fields. So they had a complete cyclic cycle. They had a complete cycle of nutrients. Nothing was wasted. It was all used back into the soil, so they were able to keep the soil very fertile. That's hard when you're running a farm, is you're growing all this produce with all these inputs, even if you're making tons of compost, and then you're selling the produce, so you're shipping those nutrients off, so you've got to replace them. And so these are some of those nutrient exchanges, and that's what we think about the compost, is that it's that building that nutrient kind of cycle. And the more things you can get into it, into that compost, and the more compost you can make, the more secure the fertility will be in your system, and the more humus you'll build up in your soil. And what I was talking about making that hot compost to get things going quickly is an idea, and to speed up the process when you're at the beginning, and then you start to plan ahead and you start to make what's called the cold compost piles, which are, you're just going to let sit for sometimes up to a year. You can look all this up and see some good designs on how to make a different cold compost. But the idea is that they don't heat up. You're just going to water them and let them sit. And you're going to layer them in a certain fashion. But the intention is not for them to heat up. It's for them to break down slowly, like Paul was talking about, basically, on the soil does. It's just a very slow process. And this is that slow process. And in the end, there's a consensus, and I think it works this way too, is you end up with this super high quality compost because it's full of carbon. And even if you had a pile that was 4 feet tall, it would maybe be 3 feet tall at the end of a cold compost cycle, maybe even be 3.5 feet tall. On the other hand, a hot compost pile will reduce, say it's 4 feet, it'll reduce below 2 feet sometimes. And there's some people that make some hot compost, though, I'll have to say this, that can do some hot composting, hot piles that claim not much breakdown in size. I imagine you can do almost anything. It's just how much you practice, like, because a lot of us, I'm sure, out there, I've done it before in the beginning when I was learning, is getting one of those, trying to make a compost pile and having it get rotten, or just not rotten at all because it dries out.
Well, I have a question, and I don't know if you know the answer, but you might. You know, these keyhole designs, I know some in Africa, they're actually putting in the center the compost pile. Now, would that be a cold compost? Since they're not actually turning it, I think they just keep adding the materials and scraps right to the top.
Well, from what I've seen, and I haven't seen the exact what they put in. Like sometimes, if they just put kitchen scraps in and no dry material, it's definitely going to rot in those containers.
Well, I think it's a mixture.
As long as it's a mixture, it'll be fine. It'll just break down in there. And the idea there is that the life in the soil migrates to that center to feed, and then moves out into the soil.
Yeah, and I think that's their intent. As they say, you know, like this, as the compost is being made, the roots of the plants will seek the nutrients that they want, and it's a very interesting design, and that might be something we want to think about here as a test to do. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And it depends on how much you want to produce.
Yeah. Like
how much production do you want? How many cycles do you want? What do you want to get out of the beds, you know, how much produce, and then you have just time too. Everything's a time element also. If you feel like you don't want something at a certain, like, let's talk about that too. There's a method, I mean, just like nature's method is we know how long that takes. A long, long time, in the sense of where you're just laying down materials. Like, you can take, just pull back mulch and throw banana peels or, you know, lead, kitchen scraps underneath the mulch in a light layer, and then cover the mulch back over it, and it'll break down. I mean, you can do that all over the place. Sometimes that can be time-consuming. If you want to rev things up, it's a very passive method, and it's all of them are worth doing. That's the fun thing. You want to do them all. When you do them all, when you do all the methods, you get all the benefits of each method, and then your blends of nutrients, of bacteria, of microscopic life and different things become that more diversified, because you're making so many different kind of compost, you're doing it so many different ways. Some areas you're doing it one area, one type of composting, so, and then it's just fun. Like, you can make a compost that you sit for a year or whatever far away. You can have the other compost piles close. Like, for instance, I make here at our place, we have these compost piles that are going to get turned every 2 days, and we have them, and there are hot composts. And there's 4 piles. They're pretty. They're a bit larger, like 3 feet tall.
Well, go to fruittreeforest.com, and there's a blog article with videos that show Matt turning the compost, and they're large piles, and it's very exciting to see. I think we need about 20 more piles.
And I think we need some more big cold compost piles too going. Matt and I have been talking about that. We have one going, but we should have some more eventually here. And the one thing that I like about these hot compost piles that we're working with right now is they're making the compost very quickly, and we have them in a circle. The compost piles are turned, each time they turn, they just go in a circle. And in the middle of that circle is our banana trees. Now, here it gets cold in the winter, and the soil gets cold. But with these compost piles around the banana trees, it really keeps that area around the bananas quite warm. And we can accentuate the warmth to the bananas with just moving the tarps that we have over the compost piles. And what happened too is we tilted we put a slope on the soil area around the bananas. So where the compost piles sit, they're kind of sloped in. So when we water them, any juices flow into the banana clump. So I wanted to work that into the system where we could have some banana trees and have the heat from the compost doing something more than just, using that thermophilic bacteria to break things down. And
well, it's really brilliant. I mean, because as you know, the bananas love water, and as the compost piles are watered, it takes any yummy goodness that's, you know, coming out of the pile, and it puts it into the bananas. And we can see baby bananas, what are called pups, growing off of the circle. And it's, you know, exciting. It's really, really a good design.
So, yeah, if you can, and that's the best thing to do, is if you can figure out another thing to do with all that heat that's being produced, it's just another benefit. I think The vermicomposting is really cool too, in that we have a few different examples here. We have a little worm bin, like it's probably a 1x1 stackable tray one that you can kind of get from lots of different places. Then we have just some Rubbermaid tubs, bigger ones that we made into like a stackable earthworm bin, and then we have bathtubs that we got from a house. These steel bathtubs that are full of worms. We just put some horse manure in there and mulch, and put the worms in there. And we put kitchen scraps in there, some other plants from the garden sometimes. Sometimes we'll throw some weeds in there, but that haven't gone to seed yet. Oh, that's another idea to talk about too, but about weed seeds. But the worms just make this amazing, what are called castings, the worm poop, they call it castings. And the organic matter goes through an interesting process in their guts, and they coat it with a bunch of different kind of bacteria. When it comes out, it completely comes out a different, much different product coming out than it was going in. It's just vitalized and it's really good stuff. And to be able to concentrate that stuff when you're making this worm bin, and then I'm sure maybe some of you out there are familiar with making the juice, which you get when you wet the vermicomposting bin.
And then there's a
juice that comes out from the drains at the bottom of these different kinds of tanks. For instance, in the bathtub, they just use the bathtub drain with a 5-gallon bucket underneath it. And we get the juice that comes out of there from, it's kind of comes from the castings and the different other stuff that's in these bins. But that's some nice stuff for the garden too. That's another side.
Well, and also the worm castings won't burn your plants, because sometimes you have manures that are very high in nitrogen, and you put them on your plants and things, and that can burn them. And they say that the worms, you know, are one of the best types of manure you could use.
Yeah, and there's a whole, I mean, you can look up all day long about worm castings are great stuff, and to produce your own, you know, and because it's nice to have the different methods, and that's what I want to stress is having the different methods, because say you're making a compost pile, you put a lot of vegetable scraps in there, okay, that's cool. And so you've got some extra sometime. Well, then you could put some of those in your worm bin. And then you've got some other stuff you're going to make a different kind of pile with. And if you have some more, if you have some variety, you have more places to put your kitchen scraps or your yard waste or however you're going to process things. And the grow biointensive method has its own composting method that it's set up, and it's a nice one, and you only turn that pile one time. You make it, you water it every day, and you only turn it one time. So, and they claim a lot of good comes from that compost pile. They have their specifics. When you're talking about recipes, they don't like to use manure. So, you know, I mean, at least horse manure. They want to use a very little amount of manures, but their limiting factor on that grow biointensive method, they have a mini farm, they call it, up in Willits, California, and their problem there is they make all this compost and they grow all these plants to make the compost, but their limiting factor is still that they don't recycle their own human poop and put it back into the system. And so they'll always be nutrient deficient. They'll always need some outside input of nutrients from like buying some type of fertilizer or something, because they're not completing that cycle of nutrient that the design of nature. That's the design of nature, that every animal poops around where it's living, and that that matter breaks back down into the soil and completes the whole chain. All other animals poop around where they live and stuff, and it all breaks down and continues the cycle. Obviously we're the only ones that flush it down a toilet.
I hear some cats do.
Oh yeah, that's true. Now they do, don't
they?
And dogs.
They can train the cats and dogs to use the toilet.
That's true. Oh no. Well, there it is.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't talk about were chickens. What do we? I've only been here since July. Chicken manure is another type of, you know, they have their droppings. And are you using, what's that method called when they just do the deep lay, or what's it called?
Oh, I don't know what it's exactly called, but like, for instance, we'll take, like, say we have a load of kitchen scraps,
mm-hmm.
and we'll just throw them out to the chickens, and they, and then like cover some mulch over them, and they'll just tear through them. And just poop right there and tear through it and eat. And you could, eventually they've mixed it all up and done their business, and you can actually go in there and gather some of that because they always poop by where they're eating.
But from the chicken pen, usually the pen,
oh,
the pen is what I'm talking about.
Oh, please. Yeah. Well, yeah, they sit in there and we just grab all that chicken manure.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll throw it in the compost.
Okay.
But there's another method. Someone was just talking about it the other day. That it's got a name that you where you use the chickens where you throw down the...
Well, you put a very deep layer of mulch or straw in the bottom of the chicken pen. And then from the roosting, they, you know, will, you know, do their business on this mulch. And then you leave it for months, and then you take it out. And, you know, it's, I guess, just one method of keeping the chickens. I'm not an expert because I've never raised chickens.
But
I do enjoy looking at them. They're fun.
Oh, they are very fun, and that's the thing is you can, like, they are good processors of chicken of kitchen scraps and waste, and they convert it, you know, into a great fertilizer, which is their poop. And then there's even a method of using pigs. If, you know, you don't even build compost piles. You just give everything to the pigs. And the pigs root through it, step on it, smash it, poop it out, and then now you have fertilizer. So, you know, and because they combine all sorts of stuff with their... So there's a method. I think Joel Solitan, what's he called? The pigerator. Instead of the garb...
And I've heard of, like, rabbitry, you know, people that raise rabbits. They have the rabbit fertilizer come out, and it goes into worm bins. So the worms eat the rabbit poop, and it ends up being this incredible, you know, source of fertilizer.
And now we're hitting the point of why I like permaculture so much, and why I like, and I've been thinking about this the other day, and I kind of try to think about it more and more, is it's all-inclusive. When you start to get into this, you don't have to do just one thing. And then you can come up with new ideas. They're doing it all the time. They're like putting, like you said, Paul said, you put the rabbits over the worm bin, and the rabbits poop and it goes into the worm bin. The worm bins eat the... You've got all... You can stack all these functions, and you don't have to say, oh, well, I only do this. Well, you can say that if you want, but you don't have to do that. You can be open, and you can accept all people's ideas and the way they do things, and let go of a lot of judgments, ideally, and try to go with these different methods. Now, if people are making rules, well, then they can make rules, and you follow the rules to making a compost, the rules of an organization that wants you to follow certain rules, and the rules are fine. Let's just all follow the rules then. But when it comes to having different compost piles, follow the rules for the compost piles and have a lot of different kinds. Different kinds of compost. And you're going to need it. You're going to need it. And it's a skill to learn. It's a safe way to process things too. If you haven't thought about that, if you have a situation where you have a lot, let's say you did, you ended up, like this is an instance in Haiti. A lot of people have gone over to help them build human manure composting systems, because the biggest problem in any disaster situation is the rate of possible infection and different diseases that are spread through human feces piling up and rotting. So learning to compost, let's say, you could almost say learning to compost can save your life. First of all, you can start producing the nutrients that plants need to grow and producing a yield that potentially could feed you, because if you haven't ever thought about it, you eat a lot of calories, and to grow that many calories takes a lot of nutrients from the soil. So you got to find a way to put those in the soil. So and you're learning compost feeds you. If in a disaster situation, or even in a situation where you want to live a little bit more off the grid, or you want to be a little more rural, you have a valuable resource that's completely overlooked nowadays, is that human feces. And so learning to deal with that is a big asset, especially, like I said, if there's a problem. And it's a real, there's some real simple methods. I think Joseph Jenkins, I think his name, has a human manure handbook. And that's a great book, not just about human, composting human poop. It's a great book about composting in general and the dynamics of it, the different research that's been done, the different civilizations and how they handled their human waste and just composting in general. That's a great resource. So it's definitely something. And then there's so many, if you're talking about human manure, there's so many different composting systems out there, especially in Europe, that are, legal and are sold on the market to be used. In some of the different states around here, you can use different composting toilet systems. That's a great, great resource. And if people are scared to put it on their veggie garden, then they can go put it in their, put it under their fruit trees or something. But it's a great thing to utilize. What other methods?
Well, something I was going to mention is that, not everyone has a lot of space. So when you're in the city, there are actually some cities that will give you a rebate, or they'll give you free vermicomposting systems. So I think even in our local area, I think it's Solana Beach and a couple different towns will give either a credit toward the purchase of a worm bin or something. So the thing about the worms is there's no smell. And you could literally have it in a condo, even if you don't have a balcony, you can put this worm bin on your counter or under the kitchen sink or in a closet, and it will not cause any smell. The worms will do their stuff, and you'll have a great way to process things. Then, like at my house, I bought a very large, what's called a tumbler.
Oh,
so
that's right.
It has two chambers, and on one side you start your composting, and every day you're supposed to go out and turn it one or two cranks, and then eventually, you start adding your components to the other side. And after, they say, 30 days, you're going to have complete compost ready to go. My problem with that, I would use it, but I would not go out there every day and turn it, but it doesn't really matter. It just, the more you turn it, the quicker it's going to be. Eventually it's going to break down. And we have it out here at the farm now. I don't know. I'm sure it's being used, but what's your opinion of that, Joey?
Well, it's full. It's got some dark stuff going in there, and we turn it, but it really, to get those things to run, to make compost at a rapid rate, we're going to have to put an electric motor on it.
Well,
with a timer.
See, I'm 6'7", everyone. And for me, I can do it. Like, it's pretty high. And if you're shorter, not to say anything about you, Joey, but it's heavy. And
I use a ladder to
turn
it. And
there's leverage involved, and it's not for everybody. Okay.
Well, the thing that's not for everybody is the fact that you've got, if you want rapid compost, we turn it every day.
Uh-huh.
But that thing could use like 3 times a day for maybe like 5 minutes each time it turns, and it turns over and over and over. So, because the key to it, which is a cool concept, is that it keeps mixing everything up really, really well, and distributes the moisture and air evenly through the mixture, because they're in these containers now. So to get the air distributed evenly, the more turning you do, the more evenly everything gets distributed, and then everything can interact with each other, all the different components that are in there. What we have, it's still warm in there. It's actually warm in there because we put some manures in there with a lot of kitchen waste and stuff like that. And the stuff's black. It looks good.
Have you tasted it?
Oh,
I smelt it. It doesn't, well, you know, and that's another thing. Some people have composted and it stinks. Like that one even stunk for a little bit because we threw so many orange peels in there, and we were juicing a lot of oranges at one time and eating a lot of oranges. So we just were like, whatever. And we just threw a bunch in there, but because it's the tumbler,
Needed brown material.
Huh? And we put that in there. So it started going good, but stank for a little bit because we weren't turning it as much. But all we did, which was nice because sometimes you have those bend systems that the different places give you or you buy, and it starts rotting in there. Well, your only option is to take it apart and take the plastic apart off and dig out the compost in there, and it's all rotten, and you're it stinks, and you have to figure out what went wrong. Did you get too much water? Did you get too much grass stuck together, or too much, you know, kitchen waste stuck together, and did it start to rot? But in the tumbler, the nice thing is if it starts to stink, you just need to turn it more and throw some brown material in there, some dryish material, maybe mulch or something, and just start turning to get those clumpies of rotten stuff mixed up, and the smell will go away. And so I thought that was pretty cool because you could just get in there and just turn it a lot and keep adding stuff in there and getting it to mix up nice and get this mixture going. I like it. We've harvested some compost out of it already because this one that Paul has, it has a screen thing too on it. So you open one of the hatches and you put this screen over it and you turn it and it's high enough where you can drive a wheelbarrow underneath it. So it dumps it conveniently in the wheelbarrow at the same time as you're turning it.
But don't you find the screen a little ineffective? I don't know if I like that screen.
If I had an electric motor,
yeah,
and I put the screen on,
be a lot easier.
And you just push the button and you just set the wheelbarrow under it, and then came back later, it would have filled the wheelbarrow up with screened mulch.
Yeah,
you know, but turning it that many times to get the fines to fall through that screen,
yeah,
In reality, it'd be easier to dump it out into the wheelbarrow than take it over to where you have a regular
sifter
screen and do it manually. But and we haven't built anything yet, a hopper, but that's more technical. Now we're talking about more mass production, methods. But really, just starting, and the big deal about composting is practicing. I mean, the more you practice, the better you get. You learn just by sight, because it's hard in the beginning, but you learn how much of each material and you'll remember. When you don't make a hot one, you'll find out why you didn't make it hot. And you have to practice. It's like all these methods with these things that have to do with nature. You know, you got it. I mean, but with anything, if you want to be a good soccer player, even the best soccer players in the world, they practice. They don't just go out on the field and then win the game and be the star. They practice and practice and practice. And they're like naturals. So don't get discouraged ever with these processes, because you can get them. It's just you just got to be wanting to practice, and it's okay to not succeed right away. Because composting, depending on how you're doing it, especially if you're doing it for the first time, can be a little tricky sometimes. Even the vermicomposting, you can start putting too much too much material in there, and they just can't eat all of it, and it starts to rot, and they don't like rotten stuff. Worms don't like these worms do not like rotten stuff in there. They don't like things rotting. And if you put too much water, if you water the worms too much, they can get soaked in there, and that can be a problem too. So, you know, you just got to keep working with it and seeing how it goes. The one thing to think about is small spaces. Like, even when we lived in a trailer park for a while, and what happened? We had a small area to live in, but it's amazing what you can pack into a small area. I mean, we had two compost bins that were 4x4x4, but they weren't piles like we have here because we have more space. They were actually frames, compost frames, so that I built out of wood, and you can do them out of pallets. They have some really good ones with pallets now, stacking up pallets on their sides.
I was just going to say that, Joey.
Oh, well, I stole it from you.
I was going to say, you don't have to spend money to do it.
No, you don't.
You get old pallets, and you stand them up on end, and you make three corners, and you just pitch it. That's the other thing, the pitchfork. Matt is saying, you know, he used to use a shovel, and when he started using the pitchfork, it makes it so much easier. The pitchfork's designed to do this, and I'm not really sure how that works, because you'd think that all the material would fall through, but boy, he sure makes it look easy to
definitely get into a rhythm. And I've asked him, I said, are you bummed doing this, you know, turn the pause? He says, no, I really enjoy it. So I always enjoyed it, because you just seeing the transition of the material from going from what it was in the beginning to what it becomes, this uniformish dark. I mean, it gets so dark. There's so much carbon in there. It's just amazing how dark and rich, and the smell. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially when you're working with it. You know, if you once you start, you'll become fascinated with the human manure part of the deal, because there's, you know, the whole stereotype that goes with it, and the experiences throughout your life, and what people say and everything. When you start composting that, and it was what it's supposed to smell and be yucky, and all of a sudden you don't even know where it's at. And they've done so much research on it. In that book, Joseph Jenkins' book, they've done tons of research on all this stuff. I mean, let's just put it like this. What's that? Milorganite? Yeah, milorganite is sewage waste from sewer systems. So you buy that in a bag from a store, milorganite, yeah, and that is everything that gets flushed down toilets, down sinks, all made into fertilizer. So they compost that, and I think they do that in windrow systems, which is a big commercial process. Not big, farms can do it, but and they process sludge from all the poop. And they do it, and they sell it in a bag, and you can buy it. So, and it works good. When you buy that kind of stuff, though, there can be a lot of, there can be heavy metals in it. Because it's everything that goes down sinks. All the cleaning products, anything you wash, anything people put in the sinks, pharmaceuticals from everybody's poop, because you get you don't know what poop you're getting. I mean, obviously you're getting everybody's poop, and whatever people flush down, so whatever they wash down the sinks goes into these, making this milorganite sludge. And if you start reading the labels on certain bags of, let's see, soil amendments or bags of like compost and things like that, sometimes they can have sewage sludge in them. And sewage sludge directly means that's from, you know, poop. And they use it because it's a fertilizer. And they know what it is, and it works good. I had this, for a story, I had an old timer. I'm an arborist by trade to take care of trees, and there's this old arborist guy, and his prescription for all sorts of tree problems. I mean, because we know they're in the soil most of all the time. There's something wrong with the soil. He would tell everybody what to do is to put this melorganite. Go buy this sewage sludge and put it down on the soil. And I mean, in reality, unfortunately, since there's so many things that get rinsed down the drain, it's kind of sad. But in reality, yeah, what would be the best thing to put on the soil is poop. Somebody's poop. Your poop. Anybody, you know, somebody's poop, chicken's poop.
I think you just like to say poop.
Oh, I like to poop too. It's just fascinating that output can be an input in the garden. And what we,
well, and honestly, guys, you know, in the United Kingdom, in the UK, it's legal to have composting systems for the human waste. And so we need to really start examining that in the United States and say, why can the UK have it and we can't? It doesn't make sense.
No.
If the system's built correctly, you can totally handle the waste without problems. Now, one thing we have not talked about really is mulch, and that was on the title of this show, Joey.
Oh, mulch.
And mulch really is a passive way of caring for soil without having to do any work, really.
Well,
just putting it out.
Well, I guess it's like that video. What's that video?
Back to Eden? Or?
The Back to Eden video where the guy puts down tons and tons of mulch. And now you have to remember where he's at. So somebody asked me about this today. I was on a conversation. They're like, have you seen that Back to Eden? I said, yeah, it's cool. And I put down tons of mulch. It's a very passive way to let's say, do cold composting in a way. You're like, it's just breaking down, building humus. Like you can put down tons of mulch, and then you come back in a year, and you can, if it was just clay, like reddish, tan dirt, just dirt, and you put mulch over it, and you come back in a year, and you scrape away that mulch, you'll have a little tiny layer of humus forming, black, rich yumminess between right in there, and it's starting to. And you'll find worms have started to come eat. They just appear. There's worm eggs everywhere. There's eggs everywhere, and there you start giving them a. And now I'm kind of talking about earthworms, but you give them a bedding, in the sense you give them a layer over the soil, where they can feel comfortable moving and coming, and give them an area to like actually live, because the soil holds moisture because you've had mulch over it. You get all sorts of activity, but you really get that layer of humus forming, which is super cool. Like we'll actually go out and harvest it because I've got so much mulch in the back that's been sitting for a while. Is we'll actually scrape away, like remove the big piles of mulch or these thick layers of mulch, and we'll go in and we'll actually harvest that humus layer out and take it and put it in the garden to use. They're like, we'll amend soil. Like say we're doing a veggie garden or we're doing a new bio-intensive, like a double dig area. We'll go out and we'll harvest that humus from in the back lot area and bring it and put it into the garden for like immediate yummy fertility. So that mulch is doing that. We didn't do anything there. It's just sitting out there, and we went and harvested it. And then we put the mulch back over the soil, and away it goes again, doing its own thing. And that Back to Eden movie, that's what they do. You get an even quicker breakdown up there, too, because in that movie, I think he's up in Washington, and they get a lot of rain. And that, you know, speeds up some of that breakdown of the mulch. So those are things to understand too. If you're gonna, like, because the one guy I was talking to today is like, well, we could just do that, and I said, well, yeah, you can just do that. It's gonna, depending on where you're at, what climate you're at, you're gonna, your rate of decomposition and how fast that just that mulch creates enough fertility for you to do what you're dreaming of doing. You have to understand the time frames and the way that operates, especially according to your temperatures and the amount of moisture you have. I mean, obviously, like in a tropical place, it's going to break down like super fast. You have plenty of water and plenty of warmth. You know, in colder areas or places that are drier, you know, you're not going to have as much water, but you're going to have the heat, so it's not going to break down as fast. So I said, it just depends on what you're looking for and the speed at which you want to do things. And Paul and I have talked before where the mulch is a, let's say this is a composting method in the sense of composting for soil fertility. So some way to get soil fertility with the method that's breaking down organic matter, which compost is doing. You have mulch there as that passive method, and it's just a time element of what you need to do. If you're in an area, like we've said this before, if you've got a big area and you don't know what you want to do with it yet, cover it in mulch. Because at least there'll be something going on. You did a one-time application, maybe do it more than one time, but you do it and you just leave it. Because that's what we did in our back areas where we're harvesting it now. I didn't even think that we were going to go harvest it. But we were moving mulch to expand this one garden area. And there it was. We were moving the mulch and we're like, whoa, look at all this. I mean, I always knew that happened. But you just forget because you look out over this whole area and it's just mulch. But oh my gosh. And then you find it. And so these are the fun processes that you start to embark on when you're looking to, like, you know, kind of mimic those processes in nature that bring, like, life, you know, to soils and life to the trees and in general. And you want to bring that near to garden, you want to bring that into your food forest, well, you got to have the organic matter and you got to have the fertility. And if you're doing pioneer species plants, you know, you can grow a lot of those, cut those and use those for compost. Those are some of those methods too of growing your own compost. The biointensive method of gardening, the grow biointensive method, really gets into that. Like, they get really into it. They have all the data. They want to tell you how much, for instance, if you want to grow all your own food, they want to tell you how much fertilizer crops that you're going to make into compost you need to grow in order to grow enough food to eat, in order to make enough, build enough fertility in the soil to grow the food that you're going to want to eat. So and it gets pretty explicit, you know, they really get into it, telling you what crops to grow, which ones do this, which ones do that, to build this fertility. And I mean, you start to really get into this and you're really looking for more than just, you know, not sending all your organic matter away, then it's a beautiful thing to study. But definitely you've got to start working with these composting systems if you want to succeed, because they take practice. But once you get them, I mean, you get them. And you usually don't have a problems again. We did have a little problem, I have to say. The other day, probably a month ago now, maybe. We decided to make a hot compost pile to make an outdoor shower. So we took this low density polyethylene tubing, that black poly line. And we put it in this pile, like coiled. I think we had like 300 feet or something. And we coiled it up inside of this pile. And I had used manure and this one kind of tree that's a nitrogen-fixing tree that produces, like, it's called a coral tree. And it produces crazy amount of leaves that have tons of nitrogen in them. Even the tissue of the trunk is juicy. And I got that from a job I was working on, and I chipped it up in our chipper, and then I put it in that compost pile too. Dude, that thing was got to be like 170 degrees or something Fahrenheit, and oh my god, the tubing, the water was so hot coming out of there, and then you could like smell like the tubing eventually kind of start to get like in the water. You could kind of smell this funk, and then if you got it on your skin, the water on your skin, like, it was cool the first, like, few showers, it wasn't that hot, but then it really started heating up, and you could smell, like, I think the plastic was like deteriorating or you know, becoming solvent in the water because of the heat. So we had to take that one apart. We made that one got too hot. And that's another thing, is when you start to get good and you get your piles too hot, they can become ashy inside, and that's not what you want either. You don't want them to get so hot that there's the heat in the inside of the pile starts to get, where you start to get ash, because now you're losing that carbon organic material. You're just losing matter at that point. And so that's where, if it's getting that hot, you got to start turning it more so that you don't get that ashy middle part. So that's something to see, you know. Well, you just go through this process and you start seeing these things happen and learning about them. But, yeah.
All right, Joy, I think we've come to the end here. So
the end of composting.
Well, we can always talk about it again. But
it's on and on.
Yeah.
It's just like our human poop.
Yeah. So you want to say poop one more time?
Poop.
All right, good. Thanks, Joy, for all your knowledge and wisdom, and we appreciate you very much. You're a great guy, and, you know, you're very generous with your time sharing with us. So thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. Of course, we don't know the topic yet, but I'm sure we'll come up with something interesting. If anyone has a topic of interest, you can email me at asktallpaul@gmail.com. The other thing is, we always like to mention, coming up in March of 2014, which is just in a few months, there's the Permaculture Voices Conference, which has all the cutting-edge leaders within permaculture and ecology that are going to be there to help inspire us and teach us the different things that we can do in our own communities, and to help promote a more sustainable future for ourselves, but most importantly for our children. So visit permaculturevoices.com to find out more information and to purchase a ticket today. All right, thanks, Joey. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye.